What's up, listeners of Light? Welcome back to the JRPG Book Club podcast with Ty,
Jack,
and Bill, with special guest
Bobby Shields
of
Baron Von Future, Arc Impulse, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff.
So today we got our special guest. I've known Bobby for a good couple years now. He's been around the block before. He knows more about weird music stuff than almost anybody I know. As well as worked many different aspects of things. So I'm very excited for us to, you know, go through some stuff with him. Yeah, Bobby?
I'm just really excited to share some time with you guys. Thanks for asking me on.
Our pleasure.
So today's episode's about music, if I remember correctly. So we're going to be talking about just, like, a lot of music aspects of, like, JRPGs and the like, which is obviously why we have Bobby on.
Hi.
Surprise, if you couldn't tell from the, title and, you know, just now.
Yeah. So, Bobby, do you want to just give us, like, some ethos, like, some background?
Sure.
Bill mentioned a couple of your projects, but...
Who are you?
There's a lot. Yeah, so the biggest problem, now that we just go...
I was a man and I was born.
We just immediately jump into a therapy session for Bobby. You want to give us some ethos? I'm like, yeah, I think it all started when my dad died, or, like, way back. So here's the thing.
Camera pants.
Right. It was a long time ago. I am a drummer, first and foremost. Drummer in a bunch of bands that have been kind of video game music centric for years. I've been in a band called Arc Impulse for about 5 years. Arc Impulse is a project that covers Super Nintendo and earlier kind of N64, kind of like that retro age of, like, I don't know, 92 to 2005, probably, like, right kind of in that middle ground. And actually, I'm looking at some of the years of some of these other games that have been released, but we are a band that is...
I love it.
Well, so I, like, from a gamer standpoint, my love is Super Nintendo role-playing games. That was kind of, like, the beginning of my love affair with... The music, we're going to get into kind of, like, I guess we'll probably talk about everyone's top 10 or, like, my top 5 or whatever. I'm worried that they change every time I bring it up in discussion. So, and I'm sure you can all relate. But the long and short is I have been a drummer since I was in fifth grade. I have been in rock bands outside of, you know, kind of like academic drumming, be it like marching band or anything of that nature, for years, since I was probably 16. I'm 34 now, so about 15 or 16, 17, 18 or 19 years of, right, just, oh God, oh God.
Wait, the numbers keep adding up.
Why does time keep moving forward? I thought we stopped it. We'll talk about Chrono Trigger later. I'm lucky enough to have been in a band with a very, very bright young man named Zach Wolfenbarger out of Tucson, Arizona, called the Runaway Five. The Runaway Five was the beginning of how I started learning how to program Game Boys. So I started programming Game Boy music, or chiptune, as some call it. And again, this is a whole nother, like, long discussion of, is it chiptune or is it not? Is it pizza or is it chiptune? Right? That whole thing. My best friend Zach taught me how to program music onto a Game Boy in 2008 or 2009. I was working for Apple at the time out in Arizona. And since I learned how to program, like, one song, it's been kind of head over heels, a love affair. And I've been kind of trying to up my game, increase my knowledge of not only the community, but also obviously, like, the technical skill of programming what's called Little Sound DJ. Little Sound DJ is the software on it. Yeah, LSDJ. It's my it's the thing. Shout out to Johan Kalinske and a bunch of other people that were involved in the development of that software. That being said,
so, I mean, me knowing nothing about music and stuff, like, it's still fun to mess with.
Oh my God, it's the best. So my challenge would be try to program a song, right? So I think what I did was I programmed something that kind of resembled a song or a melody. And then I was like, okay, I got it. I totally got it. Later that day, I decided to program 8 songs by The Clash to prove to myself that I can do this. I can totally do this. So I'm going to program Should I Stay or Should I Go? I'm going to program Clampdown. And then it was like, Police and Thieves, Lost in the Supermarket, you know, just like over and over and over again, just more and more Clash songs. Then when I hit 8 Clash songs and I was like, I'm going to program a David Bowie song. So I started doing Bowie songs into the Game Boy. And then I sat there and I was like, I'm going to write a song. I'm going to write something. That led to the Runaway Five. The Runaway Five had already been using Game Boys. I just got kind of interested in it because my lead guitar player and very good friend at the time, Zach, was programming some really incredible stuff in the Game Boy. And I was like, oh, snap. Like, we sound cool. Like, we sound really good. I didn't know how cool
stuff you guys have, and it was great.
And I appreciate that. The Runaway Five is in a little bit of a state of, I don't know, frozen. Like, I kind of hope that it would come back at some point in time. But right now, the Runaway Five has kind of broken into. Zach and I, who were the two members of the Runaway Five, joined Arc Impulse. Arc Impulse is a gigging video game music band, a band that plays comic cons.
Six of you?
It was a 6-piece originally. Then it was a 5-piece. It's actually down to 3 people right now, myself included. But like, that's a whole nother lineage kind of story.
Sure.
What's important about Arc Impulse is they were an institution in the video game music scene before Zach and I joined. When we joined, we got even more involved. We spread our wings a little bit more. We've played VGM Con in Minneapolis. We've played we played Wizard World in Chicago. We've played ShootoCon. We've played MAGFest 2017. We were on the main stage of MAGFest. And then what that led to was kind of a birthing of a whole nother kind of arm of my social connections within the video game music scene, which I then helps turn into a crew that I'm really, really proud of. I'm proud to be a part of it, called Bit by Bit. Bit by Bit is 5 different individuals that make chiptune music in and around Chicago.
It's super fun.
It is something. I miss it too. Actually, funny enough, I wanted to kind of lightly drop. I think we have a date, but we don't have a lineup for the next Bit by Bit. But it's like, it's going to be a little bit more special because it's all going to be remote. So it's going to be more of like, we're kind of going for like a telethon kind of themed show where it's going to be just basically whoever we can get in the chiptune community to do a 30 to 40 minute set that we can kind of compile all the videos together and then stream it on Twitch. So that's a whole another thing that I'm involved in. So between Baron Von Future, which is just Bobby playing drums to a Game Boy with my friends coming in and kind of jamming with me. So Baron Von Future is my main thing.
You expanded more than just you for Baron.
I did. I always tell people that Baron Von Future is me. And it's me and my Game Boy. And if you want to be in the band, you're in the band. So if anyone that's listening to this is a musician, a rapper, a singer, a spoken word, anything really, like, and you want to be interested, hit me up, shoot me an email. It's booking@baronvonfuture.com. You can just kind of reach out to me. I'm more than happy to like entertain the thought. But
Tyler, you ready to start rapping?
Oh God. rapping. There's already one Tyler in rapping. We don't need another.
You can also be a creator.
Yeah, after playing MAGFest, after being a part of that scene, after becoming really good friends with the guys in Night of the Round, becoming friends with the Super Guitar Brothers, who are like very much widely known as some of the premier video game music acts. And these are people I consider personally friends.
They show up all the time in the convention circuit stuff. I'm just like, oh, it's these guys.
Howard here also. Yeah, and so, so the Super Guitar Brothers are deeply entrenched with Ninja Sex Party, and Ninja Sex Party did did a record with the Super Guitar Brothers about it's like covers. I think they made a covers album.
But Under the Covers, I think it was called.
And it just got released, right? Like it just hit.
Oh, the most recent one? I'm not sure.
Oh God, you know what? I should look up the answer because it literally just came out, and they did a couple of songs that are like worth your time. One of them is their Rocket Man cover, which is very much a part of the Ninja Sex Party, like
set.
Yeah, it totally is. Did I say Dave? I meant Dan. Shit, he's gonna kill me. You know what? It's just called Dan Avidan and Super Guitar Brothers. That's what it's called.
Oh.
Nice. Oh my God, they do Kiss from a Rose, they do Black Hole Sun.
Yes.
They do, like, there's a couple in there that I was like, whoa, guys, like, you're doing what do they do? They did one that I was like, they did like a Rush song. And oh, Aspirations? Like, what? Oh, I was like, holy crap. Anyway, definitely worth your time. It just hit on Spotify. But these are people that I consider friends. I consider peers. We always crash in each other's places when we're out on the road, back when tours and shows could happen. But in the interim, I just kind of tried to make myself a part of the community as much as I can. I love helping people book shows, help getting people out to video game music shows, or putting on. I don't know. We did Baron Von Future's done Drunken Mario Kart Night. We're at bars where we would broadcast Mario Kart up. The rule is you can't put your beer down while you play. So you have to somehow hold your beer and play the game at the same time while listening to yours truly.
It's 64, right? Where you have like the weird.
Exactly. So it just makes it more difficult, game. Right? it's hysterical. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of that's the long and short of who I am. Again, thank you for letting me join you. I'm happy to discuss this because this is something that's been near and dear to my heart for a long time.
When we first started doing this was like one of the like number one things. I'm like, I want to talk to Bobby about music. I don't know when, but it needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill pitched this episode like super early. And I remember I was like fresh off. I saw Undertale live and I'm like, we got to do that episode.
So cool, right? How cool. I didn't make it, but almost every other member of Arc Impulse was there. I think I had a work meeting or something brutal, something that I was like, I quit. Like, I don't want to
go see Undertale.
Yeah, I'm going to go see this thing. But yeah, I'm A, super jealous that you got to go to that.
So good.
But also, we were working, I think at the time, Arc Impulse was working on a, this is the part where I'm supposed to say, an Undertale medley, but it's like 7 songs. I was like, at some point in time, it's not a medley anymore. It's like half the freaking soundtrack. Like,
yeah.
Well, you know how this goes. You guys overdo your track list and then you cut it down. And
I'll tell you that story when we get to Final Fantasy. Like, Bobby's odd obsession with Final Fantasy VI, which is,
How long have I known you and how long have you been working on this?
Right. So what I didn't do was tally the numbers. That's what I should have done. Shit. Like, when did I start telling Arc Impulse, hey guys, I want to do an album. I want it to only be Final Fantasy VI. I want it to be completely original arrangements, but using like, phrases, themes, throwbacks to the actual soundtrack. Now, this love affair started with Nintendo Power, which I have like a cupboard right over there that's like full of all of my brothers and mine's like old Nintendo Power magazines. And like, oh my God, the day when the Nintendo Power magazine showed up in the mail was like, yeah, right. And you're like, oh, that covered? the second to last page of an episode or an issue was Order Kefka's Domain, right? Kefka's Domain, mm-hmm. The 3-disc full soundtrack to Final Fantasy III or, Japan VI. I lost it. I we ordered it immediately. I like demanded my mom. I was like, I don't know. I feel like this story actually is pivotal to like why and how this matters, but I'm a type 1 diabetic and I've been a diabetic since I was 8 years old. When I was 8 years old and diagnosed with diabetes, it was like end of March, right before Halloween hit, and when Halloween hit in October, I was super depressed because I was recently diabetic. Like, you can't eat. I was doing insulin injections. You at least can't eat candy. I loved Halloween. I love dressing up. I still love dressing up. And I couldn't eat any of the candy that I had trick-or-treated. So my mom, bless her heart, being the sweetheart that she is, bought my candy for me. At that time, what's the only other thing that an 8-year-old, nerd is like interested in? It's pretty much video games. And I asked my mom, actually, I didn't even ask my mom. I asked my older brother, what game should I get? Right. And my older brother, who was 10, because we're 18 months apart, we're Irish twins. He goes, oh, we should get Final Fantasy III. So this is like back in the day when you go to Toys R Us to get a video game. It was in the big plastic case that they had to like unlock and slide. So we got Final Fantasy III, and I like remember this like vividly, like holding the box, like leaving, just being like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know
I mean, that art is so dynamic and like special.
It was different. You know, it was different than anything I had seen before to that time, because I was like, you know, I played Excitebike and I played like karate and shit on NES. And you know, and I liked Super Mario World, right? Or I liked action adventure games. I wasn't really like, I hadn't dived into RPG yet.
Right. I was saying, I mean, look at the original Final, like the original two Final Fantasy cover arts in the US, where it's like, cool, you got the black box with the like emblem crest on it. The next one's just like a red box with Final Fantasy 2 on it.
Which
then also, you have this like,
yeah, oh, so much, you know, magic in that game. I love 2. I actually played 2 after 3.
Yeah.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm because
like, English 2, which is 4. So which is 4. That's Tyler's favorite, I think, right?
4. Yeah. Yeah. 4 is my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. With so then, yeah, just so much to get into, right? I mean, like, just a whole episode just on Final Fantasy VI and, like, why it's the best game ever. Why it's better.
It'll be there in the future.
Better than 7, because it is. So
that's a whole.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know.
I expect literally if we ever get to Final Fantasy VI.
Dedicated to arguing that.
If we ever get to Final Fantasy VI, I expect, like, a full round table of people, because so many people are like, when you do Final Fantasy VI, I want to be on it.
That should be like, okay,
but you're Mog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should just have like 10-minute segments from everybody just talking about it, because like we know so many people who love VI.
Right? Like,
have a huge amount of people who, because we play the card game together, and just like all of our like circle and that is all just, yo, Final Fantasy, let's go. And that's not even counting like other friends and stuff that we all have and stuff that dig it too.
Right.
Yeah.
Is 6 the one you can pile drive a train?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I played a bit of
suplex a train.
You got to suplex the train, Jack. Come
that's
on.
Right. I never finished. I got close to that point. I know it's infamous for that, but I think that's where I stopped.
Well, so yeah, I mean, that's like pretty early.
Yeah.
There's like
like I said, I didn't play much.
Well, so Jack, here's my thing. I didn't know what I was getting into.
No, see, that's the thing. I didn't either, because I was like eight years old, probably. Because I didn't have access to games like that. So I had a friend over named Nick, and he was like probably like 10 years older than me, and he was really into like computers at the time when they were first new and stuff. And he had put an old school emulator on my computer and tell me how to access it, how to access the games. And I had like a couple dozen games on there, and I was barely at the point where I could play games that you can read. So like I stumbled upon Final Fantasy VI and I started playing that. It was interesting. That's how I found out about Chrono Trigger, and then, you know, I just kept playing that. But like, that was my introduction to JRPGs, was because this guy just threw an emulator in some game on my computer.
I mean,
that sounds like Nick too, though.
Well, it does sound like Nick.
It's a different Nick.
Oh, it's there's a different one.
Yeah,
it still sounds like our Nick.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
sounds like something he'd do.
Minus the 10-year thing.
The thing for me is like, it defied expectation. Right. Like when you sat down and you started playing it, and I was like, wait, I don't get it. You go to like a different screen for battles. I mean, this is like literally like the first. I mean, I had played Risk, you know, like on like a single board game. And I was like, I don't really get what this is. I couldn't really talk to the point of like how it went from Bobby knowing nothing, like being a child walking into a dark room, and now being like, oh, I'm in a band that's making an album that's only Final Fantasy VI music, and like I'm really good friends with this band that does like gent metal, like Meshuggah-esque covers of Final Fantasy, or not covers, but rearrangements. So oh, it's sick. It's unbelievable.
I love
so
them.
Please, yeah. I'm gonna keep pitching Night of the Round too. So like go find Night of the Round's newest album. It's outrageous.
7, right?
Yeah, 7. And my God, it's so good, you guys. It's so good.
It's great.
It's brutal. Like, those guys are, they're insane. Like, their music is insane. And then you go talk to them, they're the nicest, most, like, calm, mild-mannered, like, normal people. And then they can get up on stage, and you're just, okay. Like, I didn't expect that. Again, defying expectations, right? So,
that Final Fantasy metal.
Yeah, you got the Final Fantasy metal guy. So what's going on here is Final Fantasy VI led to Chrono Trigger. I kind of went in both directions from Final Fantasy VI. I went to Final Fantasy II or IV on Japan, which I should. I'm in a JRPG podcast. We should probably be using the Japanese numbers. And then Chrono Trigger. But also, let's not forget, like it branched out to, so right at this time, what's that? 95?
There's so many.
Chrono Trigger 95, right? So at 95, I think was also like PlayStation 1, or was that later? PlayStation 1 97?
I think it was
something like that. PlayStation 1 was around 97. I had it when I was a child, yeah. I think it was like 97, 98.
At this point in time, so let's call it a 2-year gap between Chrono Trigger and the beginning of like
94.
Silver Star Story, Final Fantasy.
This one was 94?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
PlayStation 1. Okay, so I got it.
Shows you what I remember.
So check this out. I went to like every other Square Enix game you could possibly play. Mystic Quest, Soul Blazer. Shut up.
Oh.
Soul Blazer's magic. It's a
Soul Blazer's great.
But I also went to like
it's so weird.
It's very different.
It's such a different game, yeah. That's one I would love to cover at some point.
Well,
it's
just we also
like
went
weird.
To Illusion of Gaia. And this is when
that game's great too.
This is when things went off the rails for me because at this point in time, I was like pretty impressionable. I hadn't really started smoking weed yet. I was like 10, you know, so like not yet. I was 5 or 6 years away from being cool. I played Illusion of Gaia, and this is way too much honesty because she's probably married by now, but there was this girl in junior high that I think 7th grade, what are you, 12, 13? I don't know. After Chrono Trigger, time just stopped mattering, right? In Illusion of Gaia, there's a character named Kara, and there was this girl. I think her name's character, right? Kara, right? Like the princess, or like she you find out she's a shit. Should I not be spoiling games for people?
Oh no, it's fine. We spoil everything.
Okay, sweet. Because listen, I had a crush on a real life girl named Kara, and then I weirdly crossed over. Like, okay, now I'm kind of in love with this like video game Kara, and I don't know like why you're stuck on a raft. You have to fish to like save her, and I'm like, this part of the game is going on too long. But I'm really starting to feel for this girl, which is like she's not even real. And at this point in time,
but then there's a real one over here. There's parallels.
Yeah, like now the lines are blurred.
What is my life?
And yeah, who am I? and I realized that I was like, okay, Bobby, maybe like a little too much of the video games, right? I'm like feeling for a video game character, and that's when I realized, like, no, dude, I think I kind of fell for Rydia in Final Fantasy IV also.
Oh, Rydia?
Yeah. Rydia, yeah. Oh, so also that's the whole pronunciation of names thing. Like, whoever corrects me, you're right. You're the right. Celeste, Steels, who cares? Shut up. He's a great character. Like, doesn't matter.
The thing is, I try not to do it because I'm just like, it's not worth
it's not,
arguing
and,
or
running. And anyone that corrects me is more pretentious than I am and probably and probably also correct. So right. I'm like, why? Well, that's what I mean. Is like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I respect that because I have probably corrected someone at some point in time. I'm like,
it all comes back around.
It's pronounced go-go, not go-go, okay? anyway, what I'm
go. Oh, boy.
So like, but the whole point is I started getting really emotionally invested in these games, and like to the point that I'm like associating heroism with Cyan or Cayenne's theme, depending on if you like spice or not. And I was like that theme, right? And I'm sitting there being like, yo, I love this soundtrack. What the shit? This game, like, I was into I blame Green Day for why I wanted to be a drummer. I blame The Who and The Clash and The Doors. I was raised on classic rock. My dad was all about like the Allman Brothers and the Grateful Dead. And I have a very, 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 very hippie side of me, which actually leads into how I was starting to play bands in high school, how I met this one guy named David Chadwick, who was in this other band who covered this band called Ozma. So are you guys familiar with Ozma?
Yeah, I've heard of the band.
Right, so obviously named after the Queen of Oz from Return of Oz, Ozma, the band, was very much like Weezer, except less popular, a little bit better in terms of like songwriting. I'll probably get crucified by Zach for saying that. but like Ozma was a poor man's Weezer, right? And no one, or not no one, but very few people had heard of Ozma's self-titled album, but everyone had heard of like the Blue Album, right? Like, come on. Like, I believe his name was Jonas. Like, everyone knows that shit. So I'm sitting here going, this band Ozma, who I had never heard of before, I saw my friend and later would-be bandmate David Chadwick cover the Tetris theme song with his band on the steps of New Trier High School in Winnetka, Illinois, when I was like 16, probably skipped a class to go get stoned and came back. And I didn't know this. And his band is playing on the front steps of the high school and they're playing the fucking Tetris theme song. And like, and like play like a rock song. Dude, this is like power.
When somebody plays a cover of the Tetris music and it's good and they know what they're doing, it's something else.
There's some magic there, right? So
I've heard it a billion times and I still get hit with it. I'm just like, damn, that's good.
There's a whole like, I should have like a Google Drive of like cited material that I'm like, no, you have to listen. But because of that, I was already a drummer. I was already like playing in bands that I liked. I was already starting to play to a click, which means I could like play to like electronics that I had built around me. Then flash forward to college. I went to the University of Arizona. I met a bunch of people that were musicians out there. I played in like 4 or 5 bands in Arizona during my stay there. But that's also when I learned how to program the Game Boy. So then I'm like programming the Game Boy. I'm setting challenges for myself. I'm like, you know what? I could program Bohemian Rhapsody into the Game Boy. Watch me. I bet you I could do it. I could, kind of, to a certain, until the Scalamouche part. Like, until the whole choir thing happens. And I got to that point, like, and I just go, eh. I just put the Game Boy down and walked away. Like, all right, I'll get back to this later. But
we'll leave Queen to the Proto Men.
Right, so... So I've opened for the Proto Men a couple times. They're lovely.
So good.
They're so fun. And like, and I've got fun stories about them too, but I actually really, really like them. So I don't want to like say any stories. And actually the funny thing is none of the stories are like bad. The band, the Proto Men is one of the most, they're so wholesome. Like
I got the pop-up book right over here.
Oh, hell yeah. It's so cool, right? At some point,
I think I got a poster up on my wall somewhere.
I think at some point in time, the Runaway Five, at this point in time, this is like 2006. The Runaway Five had started playing in Tucson before Fangamer was a thing, right? So Fangamer didn't exist yet. We knew Camille and, oh God! What's Camille's husband's name? Shit! You gotta edit this part out.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Well, and now my friend Alex like works for Fangamer, and like that, you know, shout out to Tucson and the whole Camp Fangamer thing. I'm sitting here going,
they have so many good products and stuff. It's one of like the three websites I'm always like checking.
No, they're fantastic, and also yeah. I believe that one of their designers was one of the chief character designers for Undertale.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes.
That's cool.
And Kobe? I'm just like, holy shit. Like, this is... So here's the thing. The Runaway Five, as a band, named after the band in Earthbound, which is also one of the most, like, cynical and hilarious, sarcastic JRPGs. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that side plot where you have to rescue the band from their abusive record label. You have to help them get a wad of money.
So
and what city did they live in? The second city that you go to, which is called Tucson. Hilarious. So we called the band the Runaway Five. At some point in time, these 3 or 4 guys came in to one of our shows and they were like, did you guys name your band after Earthbound? And we were like, yeah. I think one of them was dressed like Ness. So we were like, yeah, but you probably should have talked about this. And they're like, well, we're this company called Fangamer. So they started inviting us to come hang out with them. They made us little clay figurines of all my cardboard robots. I would build stage like settings.
Those robots are fun, man.
So I feel like there's like, I don't know, it's just a lot to talk about, but
you're somebody who's a lot in general.
In
a good way.
I do a lot. Well, I mean, I realize that, but I also went back and listened to myself recorded on a video a while ago and I was like, dude, I am annoying. It's like, oh God. Anyway, the long and short was Tucson, going from Chicago to Tucson was a good move. It was put me on a good trajectory in terms of like learning more about video game music. This was never the intention, right? This was never part of the plan. But after Tucson, I moved back to Chicago and the Runaway Five came with me. So when that happened, that was like 2011, 2012. I looked at Zach, and we actually, at this point in time, we're also buddies with a band called Random Encounter. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Random Encounter crew. So Josh Thu, the drummer from Random Encounter, also a good friend. Shout out to Josh if he's checking this out. He might be. They have since relocated to Winter Park, Florida. Winter Park, Florida is like secretly this like nerd haven.
Are they still playing?
No, they're not. They are not still playing. They are done, which is sad because I believe Random Encounter did video games live. They like...
I think so. Yeah, because
on stage...
Caesar, who was on a previous episode, used to do video games live stuff, and he knew them.
Yeah, so. He's like, oh yeah, Random Encounter, yeah. So Random Encounter was brilliant. They had an accordion.
Oh, so good.
They were so sick, dude. And Josh... I believe Josh is from Libertyville.
Huh.
And I'm like, yeah, how did I meet Josh Thu? Like, I don't know how I met him. I cold emailed him, or I didn't even cold email him. I cold Facebook messaged him saying, hey, Josh Thu, can my band play at Nerdapalooza? This is 2013. Nerdapalooza is in Orlando, Florida. This was actually what is widely known now as the last Nerdapalooza, because this is the one.
Your fault.
The headliners were Nerf Herder and they the Giants. And if you don't know about the story about what happened, They Might Be Giants' people sued Nerdapalooza for misrepresentation because they were told They Might Be Giants told Nerdapalooza or they Nerdapalooza told They Might Be Giants that they're going to play to, like, you know, I don't know, 15,000 people, some number that was like 3x what it actually was.
Yeah, that sounds like conventions.
Well, that sounds like every convention, right? I mean, like this you shouldn't get sued for driving in the same lane, right? Like going the same speed. That's like getting a ticket for the same speed. Anyway, They Might Be Giants literally put a nail in the coffin of Nerdapalooza that turned into a whole shit show. But like my boy Hex and Josh Thu were like the main brains of putting on Nerdapalooza. This is 2013. Zach and I paid for our own flights out there, found a buddy to crash with. I found someone that I could borrow Rototoms from in Orlando. That like I we just know people because of Facebook, social media, email. We make music. We're louder than everybody, and I have no shame in terms of just messaging someone on Facebook. I'm pretty sure, that's how Bill and I met. I'm not.
We met at a show.
Because you were when you were thinking about Comet Concert, and this was like
that's when I was trying to do that.
This is kind of famous for that, and I was like, oh, I can help. I want to help. This sounds like something of course I could do this.
Yeah, and then I think we started jamming on like Facebook Messenger and stuff.
Right.
Because I remember going to a show, and I don't remember why I was there specifically at the time.
Right. I don't like music. Me, personally, I don't know.
I was there for – I think I was at a different show, like a different concert. And then somebody – because I was talking to somebody, and they're like, oh, talk to Danny. And then Danny's like, talk to Bobby.
Oh, Danny Solaris.
Yeah.
So
which I plan to have on here at some point.
Gatherings at that point in time.
Yeah.
With
it was something along those lines. It was some weird chain of events.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And it still is. But like anyway, that's all the whole like how did Bobby from Chicago somehow kind of learn how to program Game Boys, inject himself into a video game music scene that he really had no business being a part of, and then like 4 years later played Magfest. Like okay, so now we like hang out. I don't know, like I like chit chat with you know the guys in Urizen or Danimal Cannon or like those fools who like you know have games that they scored. Like one thing I have
good games and they scored.
I really thought Shapes and Beats was cool. Like
yeah,
oh that game was
I didn't realize he programmed that or not programmed but did the music like, for that.
The guys that built
my nephew was playing
made
it.
The game so that Danimal could have, like, I was like, holy shit.
My nephew was playing it, and I walked in, and I'm like, I know this music. I'm like, go back to the title screen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no shit.
Second. So this also turned into something crazy because I wanted, when I was getting together with Bit by Bit, one of the guys in Bit by Bit is Nigel Shields. And Nigel Shields, shout out to Sasquatch, and Nigel Knows Snacks, one of my other favorite buddy podcasts. He was like, I mean, first off, we have the same last name. So, like, that was weird because we were both kind of like, shit, dude, are we family? Like, oh, God, do we just not know each other? So Nigel Shields has been doing chiptune music under the name Sasquatch for years. He's like the godfather of Chip Break. at least in the Midwest, I mean, really globally, but oh my God, go see Sasquatch. He throws some of the most incredible sets I've ever seen, and now he and I like build shows together, along with Fino Sai, who also definitely should be shouted out, and the rest of the Bitburger crew, CCDM, some of the like the like proggy dark noise, you know, environmental sound collapse. I think I met him, Kevin Gondek. I think he was doing visuals for I Fight Dragons at the Metro, and I went upstairs to go bug him, and I was like, "Hey, who's doing visuals?" And he's like, "I am." And he's like the most mellow dude. He and I are like polar opposites. Like we're like oil and water. And I'm like, "Hi, I'm Bobby." And he's like, he is environmental sound collapse. Oh, and I think he's actually probably using a different name now. Fuck. I don't remember. I can't keep up with everyone's like stage names. But his shit is like thrash noise, dark, weird, awesome. I mean, so cool. Around the same time, I met William Sides of William Sides Atari Party, who has a programmable Atari cartridge that he makes his own music, and I love that dude too. Like,
I remember going to a show with him playing and having to like reset the cartridges the way they have to.
His mixer is like sparking, and you're like, okay, this is like, great. Kind of dangerous.
It'll play the thing. He has to like quick switch it out and crazy stuff. It's fantastic.
Come on.
Right. Yes. He like crosses his fingers totally, to like totally. Have it work.
Okay. So all of
imagine like playing music and like having to like reset your cartridges because they're like, you know,
I've done it on stage. It sucked. Yeah. At certain points in time, you got to go, okay, what's the cost benefit analysis of we think we're cool. And we think we're cool enough. No. And this is like the holy war that happened within the Runaway Five. Zach is all, everyone has to see that we're using a real Game Boy. Everyone's got to know we're using a real Game Boy. Everyone has to know. Everyone has to see it. And I'm like, no, they don't. Nobody cares. Shut up. Like, and you know, my mentality is, dude, no one's even watching the stage. Like, I built stage settings. I do visuals. We built a light show. And he's like, everyone's got to see there's a Game Boy. And I'm like, nobody cares. So it only took
about... half the bars you guys play at, it's like that. But there'll be the one guy who's like, yo, that's cool.
Well, and so Zach is like playing for that one guy. And I'm like, fuck that guy. Like, I don't care. Like, what matters is, do you like our music? Is our music fun? And, you know, it was basically power pop. We were trying to be Devo with a Game Boy. What ended up happening was I won the Holy War, that nobody cares. And he and Zach will tell you, no, I never said that. Like, I never thought everyone needed to see the Game Boy. And I'm like, that was only a 4-year argument.
Don't talk about it.
But we ended up kind of agreeing. Nobody needs to see it. The backing tracks could be run from behind the drum set. And as long as they sound like a Game Boy, it sounds like a Game Boy. Who cares? This is when it started to get more fun, is when we joined Arc Impulse. And now we got to sit down and go, what video game song would you want to play? Or would you want to like be in a band that would perform? Which is like a really interesting question.
It's cool that you could say that's a question you have to like answer yourself.
or you have to answer A, yourself, B, to other people that you're playing music with, because then, one of the members of Arc Impulse comes up and goes, I really wanted to play this song from Guilty Gear.
And I'm sitting here going,
what the fuck is Guilty Gear? Because I'm like living in Super Nintendo. You know, I'm probably playing Super Mario RPG, right, at this point in time. Yeah. And he's like, let's play Guilty Gear music. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And so we like have all these, you know, this is so funny. Like, we have all of these arrangements of games that like only some of which I've actually played. We do a Persona 5 game. Oh, we do a Persona 5 song. And I don't think I think I started playing Persona 5, but I didn't even try to get far. Oh no, it's so good. No, I get that. And I know the music is good. And I know. Some of the music from video games that I've played is like really embarrassing, and some of it's like super not. Some of it's really cool.
Yeah. That's how that works.
Still very proud of it. Xenogears, right? Probably one of the best ones on PlayStation. Actually, what this leads into really is the like, what's a JRPG and what's not question that I think Bill and I were discussing a little bit. Because I'm like, aren't they all? Like, what's not a JRPG?
it's a hard distinction. I mean, It's definitely hard to answer that because, like,
well, the like a lot of I asked you, genre depth. Is Zelda a JRPG?
I would say no.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to fight for either side of the argument because I see both sides of it.
Yeah, it's one of the things I'm kind of on the same
board. So I want to know your thoughts.
I mean, it's an RPG that was, you know, created in Japan by a Japanese company and stuff. I think it was, like, the way it was built, though, was in the time and stuff. So, like, there's a lot of games that stuck into that genre fit.
Okay.
Whereas Zelda has kind of expanded out. It's kind of its own kind of deal.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Is Secret of Mana a JRPG?
Yeah.
Why?
Because. No,
it's my podcast.
Well, are you talking about Zelda 2? Because that has role-playing mechanics.
But side-scrolling towns.
But, like, the other Zelda games, like Zelda 1 doesn't have that.
It's
Zelda action. 1's an open...
So you'd call action it an action adventure, even though you collect items.
It's more of an adventure.
Okay.
Yeah. Collecting items doesn't make it an RPG.
Right. Yeah. So strategy, multiple dungeons, full open world map.
I think there's a few designations to an RPG. Does it have, you know, like a dice system where to deal damage and stuff? Is it like Zelda? It's like cool. This thing takes 3 hits depending on this scale, right?
Okay.
That's Zelda. So that designates it more into the
adventure category. But if I power my weapon and I have if I spend the time in Secret of Mana to grind on a certain weapon, I level up that weapon, then I'm feeling like, oh, I should equip this weapon when I'm fighting this kind of an enemy. Therefore, I consider that more of a role-playing game because now it's a strategy thing. I need to heal. The timing of my moves is important. And much more importantly, in Secret of Mana, you don't go to a different screen to battle. It's all just right there out in the open. So is it an RPG or not?
Yeah, I mean, the factor of, you know, being in another screen, like having turn-based or the battle scene, I don't think designates it as an RPG or not. It's the mechanics of the things, right? Like D&D, right? That's an RPG, right?
Right.
So if you look at a lot of those games where it has mechanics, like if you look at Knights Old Republic, that's not a JRPG, but it's an RPG.
Right. Okay.
Right? So if you look at it in that system, it's that. But depending on, you know, where in the spectrum you're looking, it'll be different because, like, just because there's a genre doesn't mean there's sub-genres in that genre.
Right.
You know? So like...
Right, like apparently you know, Final Fantasy IX has a card game also.
I mean, so does 8.
Yeah. Right, and I played 8 more than I played 9. I actually played 9, or I didn't play 9. My roommate played 9 recently. And, like, what's funny is, okay, so I have a Halloween costume for a black mage, but mine is just non-denominational black mage. It's not a specific black mage.
I'm not Vivi.
Well, so people at my work were like, oh, are you Vivi? And I'm like, you shut the fuck up. but I went out, and my little brother bought me an Etsy. There's a woman that makes wizard hats, just in case you're wondering. Shout out to my girl.
You're part of the biggest collection of wizards ever.
I am a Guinness Book of World Record holder. Thank you for citing. This is part of my ethos. I am a Guinness Book of World Record holder for being in the room for the largest gathering of wizards ever.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man.
And I did it 2 years in a row, and Guinness only counted the second year, even though we demolished the world record year one and year two.
Nice.
So anyway,
I think it's because it was like more generic the first year. It was like wizards or
no, you know what it was? I think they got us on a technicality. If you didn't have a wand, because okay, so here's the thing. Zach is sitting here, we're like having a beer, and he goes, I don't know, man, a pointy hat, a cape, and a wand does not a wizard make. And I looked at him and I was like, false. False. Wizard created. Like you are now a fucking like, I don't know. Black magic? Like, what? Do you practice the dark arts? Like, what are you talking about? Oh, Zach, can you actually levitate? Like, is that what it takes to be a wizard? Like, put a fucking costume on, man. Have some fun. God, life is short. Right. So then I go, first off, I knew I was right the entire conversation because I was also in line. I believe I was tripping. I was dressed up like a wizard. And I was like, yeah, and everyone was just going,
just living your best life.
Wizard, 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 wizard. Yes, wizard. Of course.
the spies like us, doctor.
Oh, exactly. It's exactly that, except the line didn't end. The line, like, imagine the line down an entire McCormick Place, like, convention room hall, right? But then when it got to the end, it fucking doubled back. Like, before they were even counting us, we were like, we know we're going to win. Like, we know we're going to win this thing. But if you didn't have a wizard wand by the time you got to the front, they had a box of chopsticks. Break the chopsticks and give you one of them. They're like, here you go. I was like, I love MAGFest. Holy shit.
That's genius. That's fantastic.
Love it.
Anywho, okay. I think I've hit on like Final Fantasy VI, which is my number one. So if I'm going from the top down.
That's your baby, yeah.
Yeah, but within the top five, in no particular order, Chrono Trigger is probably like number two.
That's fair.
So
that's such an amazing arrangement of songs and stuff.
Right. I mean, just literally like memorable, like weirdly emotive.
I mean, they got the A team on that game and every department.
And it clearly shows and I mean, you know, I will have
you don't need to tell you, people how good
I will send you a video of God is Playing with Power, who's based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Arc Impulse, and the Super Guitar Brothers all collabing on stage for Chrono Cross The Wild. What's it like?
Yeah.
It's like right on the tip of my tongue what the song is actually called, so forgive me. But I have a video of it, and it's like outrageously good. We practiced it like once, and I was like, everyone here knows this song already. Like, it doesn't matter. We don't need to rehearse. Let's talk about Chrono Cross. I'm actually really interested to know how you guys feel it weighs up against like the first one, because I was a little let down.
We
have a podcast episode about that.
Yeah, a couple weeks back.
Is that commonly felt? Is that like what everyone vibe with that?
The thing about, for me at least, for Chrono Trigger versus Chrono Cross is there's a lot of things I don't remember about Chrono Trigger. It's been many a year since I've played it last.
Yeah, same.
Right.
You do. 100% due to play it again. Yeah. And I'm aware of this. But
right, of course.
As a game, if I was just looking at it critically as a game, I didn't think it was very good. We were all pretty split. I was on the lower end, Ty was on the higher end, and Jack was kind of in the middle.
I got you.
But the soundtrack is one of the things that I'm like, this is amazing. This is a 10 out of 10 soundtrack. Except for the battle
clearly
theme,
is where the budget went.
Yeah.
Drives you nuts after a while. Everything else about it is amazing, that soundtrack. It's probably become one of my favorite soundtracks in recent years, because it's just like that level.
It's a really good one to just like throw on in the background for a while.
Yeah, study music, lo-fi video game music, soundtracks to chill to.
In comparison to the two, you know, they're different. They're going for different tones. They're going for different, you know, points. I think they're both good. They're both valid.
They're both JRPGs, which is again qualified.
I have fonder feelings for I think the Chrono Trigger soundtrack, but if I want to just chill out, I've been putting on the Chrono Cross soundtrack way more than almost most music soundtracks recently. There's a great one. I think it's called Parallelists or something like that. It's straight up just amazing. Remixes and stuff, and it's great.
Shit's just really good. It's just really good stuff. And like,
yeah.
Oh God. What about derivative? What's the word I'm looking for? Like, not like covers or tribute, but like, people that like sample game soundtracks.
So like they're playing like OS, and then they have clips of those other ones in?
So at first, the first example I was kind of thinking about was like Megaran, right? Who is a pretty well-known rapper 100%. At this point in time, at least within like the nerdier video game music scene.
Look, you look up Rock,
who's a great guy. And Raheem is the nicest 100%. Human being. But the guy's the first rapper or the first musical artist ever actually properly sponsored by Capcom. To the point that he can't get sued for using a Mega Man 2 beat, like, even though, and so I wanted to get into this with you also, which is even though Flashman is basically Seek and Destroy by Metallica, even though Crash Man by Mega Man 2 is almost exactly a Prince song, like, Well, right. Like, we don't want to talk about how the influence of American classic rock on Japanese music programmers to the point that, okay, Life in the Fast Lane by the Eagles has that one breakdown part in the bridge that goes, bwee, bwee,
bwee, doo, doo. How'd that go? Can you do that again?
Exactly. It's the backbone of Crash Man.
100%.
And I'm like, that's a fucking Eagles song. Like, what is going on?
No, 100%.
I mean, that's not an isolated example.
Pokemon has a couple classic rock songs in it too.
Yeah, absolutely. There was even when they did Sonic 3, they got Michael Jackson to do part of the soundtrack.
I mean, we don't have to talk about Earthbound. Like, that's so well known at this point.
Well, right. So Earthbound, like, as far as like a cultural kind of phenomena, like that, well, at least that what it was, because when you bought the game, it came in the huge box. It came with the manual that I totally have right over there. Yeah, well, it's rare if it's not as completely beat up as the one that I have.
Hey, at least you have it. I wish I had a copy.
It's meant in box, Bill.
Don't invite me over because it might be gone.
I'll fuck it up.
No, it'll walk away.
I'm just thinking on it. Right. How good is it that as you're the American boy who can just call his dad for money?
Yeah, it's true.
Biggest fuck you to America from Japan. Like, love Japan. and we're all like, we love you too. Oh my God, Wickove, this is the best game of all time. Take all of our money. In fact, mark it up. This is so funny. And I'll call my dad. I'll be able to afford it. Don't worry.
Woof.
So funny. Wait, what's that game where you're the president of the United States and you get into a mech and you just kill other robots?
Heavy Mech Wolf?
Earthbound 2.
Some software just re-released it.
Yeah.
It was
from it's on the tip of my tongue. I'm sorry, there's like so much content that I've started.
But I know it's not that. It's something like ridiculous like that, though.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking it up really quick because it's such a game.
Metal Wolf Chaos.
See? I
there it is.
I was close. Yeah.
If that doesn't scream America, I don't know what it is.
So good.
Bro, sweet title.
Oh, man.
They probably rolled the American word dice and just like.
What is something that just like exudes power? This.
Yeah.
Metal Wolf Chaos. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Question: Is Metal Gear Solid a JRPG?
No,
it's a self-action game.
I wanted to say this before. I think one of the defining aspects of an RPG is an experience system. You don't find many RPGs without an experience system of some sort.
Yeah,
where your character grows.
When you say experience system, elaborate on that for me.
Leveling up specifically. Leveling up.
Yeah. Just your weapons growing, your character growing, dealing with numbers getting bigger.
Oh, that's one of the big things.
And that being like a main aspect of the game.
Yeah, Borderlands is a shooter, but you level up. Like
if you grinded, you can be better at the game.
RPG.
Yeah,
it has RPG elements.
If you want to take it all the way back, look at Final Fantasy 1 and Dragon Quest, right? What
were
they trying to mimic?
Okay.
D&D. Like, games like that.
The Black Cauldron by Walter.
But
it's exactly the world's most vanilla D&D campaign.
But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to mimic that to a certain extent with cool, your character's growing.
And I hear
stuff like that.
I'm partially pushing because I wonder if everyone would agree with us. Like, I hear you, Jack. Like, I know what you mean. And I know that we have empirical evidence to cite why you're right. Like, why you're talking.
But in my heart.
I'm pushing. Well, but in my heart, I know that I'm right. Therefore, I'm right. Do you see how this
works?
We're living in a post-truth economy.
I just don't understand how people can think that Zelda is an RPG. It doesn't have any staples of an actual RPG.
Long gameplay. Multiple worlds.
Open world games have that.
I think.
Okay, so maybe I'm just convoluting it because it was one of like the first open world games that I gave about.
One of the big
so like,
is when it first came onto the scene and stuff, it got labeled as that a lot, And a lot of people labeled it as such. Because there wasn't a ton in that genre already and things like that, it kind of got associated with that label. I know when I was growing up, I said, oh yeah, Zelda's an RPG, you know? But, you know, looking at it like objectively as an adult, okay, yeah, no, it's not.
This is Bill actually admitting that he was ignorant.
Oh, I'm always ignorant. I'm ignorant now.
I'm a child now.
And I'll be the first person.
And I know that Jack, I know that you're right. I'm partially playing devil's advocate because at one point in time, I was like, yo, Bill, you were talking about JRPGs. Like, what's an RPG that's not a Japanese RPG on Super Nintendo? Is there one?
Well, what I want to know is what's the difference between an RPG and a JRPG?
The fact that it was made in Japan.
Yeah.
Is that literally the only reason?
I think that's what
really,
the big thing.
That's the big thing for sure. Yeah, like one thing that I'm excited to talk about in terms of music is like Undertale, but I always have to say Undertale isn't technically a JRPG, it's just a normal RPG. It has a lot of JRPG like tropes, but
It's a weird
So I just really want to talk about Undertale, but I can't because my podcast isn't allowed.
Which is why I want to talk about it on this episode, because we're talking about music. I get to break the rules a little bit.
Right. No, I'm fine talking about whatever on this thing. And it's one thing is at some point I want to develop beyond, you know, what it is. But at this point, I'm like, cool, let's talk about this, build our core and grow it in terms of just like what we talk about. But
when Bill first asked me, I was like, okay, so I should look up all of the anime or all of the anime related RPGs that I've played. And I like started with like, shit, I guess Lunar. And then I was like, what else did I like really wait for an anime cutscene?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like which ones like stood out to me? Because for me it was like, okay, you're 10 years old, Sci-Fi Channel is still a thing. This is when you start waking up at 10 a.m. or I'm sorry, at 8 a.m. on a Saturday just to get in both Saturday animes. To watch Venus Wars and then watch Vampire Hunter D. And then because you gotta have 4 hours of anime every Saturday. Like otherwise the fuck kind of a 12-year-old life.
You gotta get at least 3 episodes of Inuyasha in.
Right. Well, and then I'm sitting there going, oh God, I think I saw Ninja Scroll when I was too young, and there's like a lot of really vile shit that happens in that one. And I was
halfway through Dragon Ball Z. It always seems the same thing happening, but you know, when I was a kid,
every episode's exactly the same. And look at how profitable of an organization it is. Like, come on, wouldn't you press and repeat? Like, I would. Holy shit. I didn't really read mangas, specifically because A, there's no soundtrack. B, but I did really get into like Cowboy Bebop. Here's the thing: I got into Cowboy Bebop like a year ago. like I totally missed it. I missed it when it was happening, and now I'm like, it's the greatest fucking thing ever, amazing. Of all time.
Another great soundtrack.
So incredible. And I heard that the show wouldn't have even happened if the creator wasn't so inspired by the band that he saw. There was like a jazz band that he like saw in like the clubs that he was like, holy shit, this like it was literally like the theme song, like the one that is the theme, like was like a song that he heard and it was like, holy shit. Like, I heard that. I can't back that up. It was anecdotal that I was like, well, that makes perfect sense to me because I'm listening to this entire thing. Like, dude, halfway through season one of Cowboy Bebop, I was like, dude, there was like a couple of episodes in there that were like unexpected. Oh my God, I'm crying now. Oh, like, I didn't want to have feelings, but like, oh my God, when they, when she finds the video of herself as a child, and she does like a cheerleading exercise.
Yeah.
Or she does
when Trey Valentine does all
for
that.
For her future self. I like the episode ended and I was bawling and I called my mom. I was like, holy shit, you guys, I didn't want to experience any of this. Like, so this is what I mean. Like the unexpected engagement level, the character development, the fact that I wanted to know about the character's past. That to me explained more of a role playing game. I mean, like, obviously, like, you guys are presenting, like, you know, real arguments. And for me, I'm like, no, it's 100%.
Are you going to tell me that Cowboy Bebop isn't a JRPG?
I had a lot of experience from that game. So, yeah, it's JRPG. Totally.
It's one of those, like, the theater things. Like, you say it's a box, it's a box. If you say it's a house, it's a house. Yeah. Kind of thing. If you say it's JRPG, it's JRPG.
Yeah.
Damn you, a box.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of designations and stuff like that, and I'm sure everyone, well, probably a slightly different take on, you know, what it is. But for me, the big thing is, does it follow, you know, some of the basic things that you get out of like D&D in that way for the RPG element of it? And then the also designation of, you know, was it Japanese primarily made, or was the company that made it primarily a Japanese company, like Square and all those? Most of those are all, like, those are all considered JRPGs because it's a, that company makes those. That's what it is.
That's because that's what that company does. Yeah,
I mean, look at Atlus. Most of their stuff is all localized games from out there that they bring over here. You know, that most of the stuff that they do, a lot of those is qualified as under JRPG or something in that vein. You know, so it varies. I know we want to talk about this. We want to talk about some of our favorite, you know, soundtracks.
Well, I'm curious to know your guys' why don't, should we keep it to five?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh man.
Ty's like, fuck no.
Mine are
like, get out. You know what?
For me, it's like, it's all very vague. Like, I have like this pool insane of RPG like music that I like to dip into.
Right.
I was gonna say, I mean, like, look at a couple months ago, I would have never said, oh, Chrono Cross, you know, because I didn't play it, I didn't experience it. Now for me, I'm like, yo, this is up there. This is top 10 favorite soundtracks for a game I don't even like. So yeah, I think we should come up with, and maybe instead of top five, we'll do top, say, three, at least JRPG like soundtracks, and we'll do, you know, one or two personal other ones, adjust as needed, to your personal tastes and what you feel passionate about. I know for me, I think, because this is all gonna be, it's not going to be objectively good for me. It's going to be what ones are like mean it's something
what,
to me.
What did you hear like, right? At a certain time in your life when it was important?
And that I needed it or whatever. Yeah. As most people on this podcast and listening to this probably at this point now, Tales of the Abyss is one of my all-time favorite games. And that soundtrack is very good in my opinion. So Tales of the Abyss is one of them. Pokemon Gen 2. Johto. I love that. It's one of my like peaceful music that I'm just like, I need this, you know, and then it gets up there. They did a vinyl release of this arrangement that's amazing. Johto, it's called Johto Legends. Check it out. I love it. I put it on the background all the time. I have the, like I said, the vinyl of it too. And then probably Persona 5. It's between like any of the Persona like 3 to 5, because all of those soundtracks are just amazing. Yeah. Persona 3 really gets me go, or Persona 4 music really gets me going. So does 5. The remixes that they did for the dancing games are amazing. So, you know, anything in that vein is just like, it's kind of that like block slot of Persona because they just have amazing music. In those slots. For non JRPGs, I don't know. It's kind of all over the place for me. I really love, like, you know, the chiptune stuff. So, like, if you look at Anime Noguchi, they did the Scott Pilgrim versus the World soundtrack.
And, oh, that was an amazing soundtrack. Yeah.
That's an amazing soundtrack. Like, I put it on the board game shop all the time. Recently, River City Girls.
River City Girls is so good.
Is hands down amazing.
Dude, it's so good. Anyway, okay, go on.
It's one of my favorite soundtracks, and I barely scratched the surface playing that game. It's so good. The game itself is amazing, but like the music is hands down just
outrageous,
amazing. There's you know, there's other stuff. Sunset Riders. Sunset Riders is and it's so good. I mean, if you want to go into arcade games, the Ninja Turtles and stuff like that. But yeah, Sunset Riders is absolutely like just amazing. You know, Jet Set Radio Future. Like again, it's such a broad topic, music, because like so much music just speaks to you when you need it.
Right.
That's some of the top ones for me. I'm sure there's tons of things that I should recommend, but I don't, cause I'm just not thinking of, but you know, there's some of the ones that have been, you know, in my regular rotation, if you will, or just mean something to me. So,
Jack, do you want to go?
Oh, sure. My tastes always like constantly are changing, and like I'm listening to a soundtrack.
100%.
Like I just got into listening to Final Fantasy 15. I've been checking that out a bit more. That's played the whole game. I loved it. The soundtrack's amazing. You know, and I've had a bunch of those songs on repeat recently. Definitely Final Fantasy 7 is my favorite. 10 also has great soundtracks. Another one that's on repeat is any of the Xenoblade Chronicles soundtracks. 1, 2, and X
are just
incredible. X is probably my favorite of the three.
That's one I haven't gotten to touch at all.
It's got your weird, strange, bizarre choice songs, but then it's got some of the most epic stuff you'll ever hear. Because it's by the composer that did like Kill la Kill and Attack on Titan.
Which those are, soundtracks are, I mean, both of those too. Shows are like fantastic. I mean, like I kind of lost my shit. Watching Kill la Kill. Well, I was like, I fell back in love with anime as like a 30-year-old with Attack on Titan. I was like, holy shit, yeah. This is so dramatic. Like, I cannot believe how intense this is.
Yeah,
I get that.
What was it? 100% like per chance. I actually re-downloaded Kill la Kill yesterday so I could rewatch it. So good.
I think we're gonna need to do a sidecast with anime at some point.
Oh, I'm sure. We could do a whole another like series if we want to.
But another one for sure is the Dot Hack series. I go through that all the time.
I always forget how good that soundtrack is. We talked about it before. It's so great. Good.
There's just so many good songs. Another one that I just got into recently. I've never even played the game, but I heard it from the... Okay, so there's this website. I don't know if you guys know about it. It's called rainwave.cc. It's literally just a video game radio, and you log in, and you can pick a song. They have lists of all these games and all these songs, and then you pick it, and then people vote. You get three songs to vote, and then the most popular one gets to be played next. And if no one's put in any songs, then it generates three random ones, and then you vote.
That's cool.
I was listening to that on my way to work one day, and then this song came on, and I was like, what is this game? And I looked it up, and it's Shin Megami Tensei 4, and I've never played any of those games. Holy cow.
Persona, that whole soundtrack. But Shin Megami Tensei is the like parent to Persona, and just anything from that like realm is just, the sound is amazing. I don't think I've played one of those series of games and not had a good soundtrack to it.
But yeah, I've been listening to that a lot. And then, of course, Kingdom Hearts. If you've listened to our podcast, no, I wouldn't walk away. But no, all the Kingdom Hearts just has amazing songs in each and every one of its games, and those are constantly in my rotation for sure.
Yeah.
Non-JRPG stuff, though. I absolutely recommend the Spyro series. Spyro 1, 2, and 3 are some of my favorites. That's all done by Stuart Copeland, who's the songwriter and, I believe, keyboardist for The Police.
Drummer,
yes.
Yep.
So
probably would know that.
For sure, Spyro is constantly on my playlists. And Banjo. Is a good one.
Another classic.
So good.
Grant Kirkhope is
incredible.
I was gonna say anything he does is just great. Right.
Yeah, like Ukulele came out, and he has a hand in that. And
the music is great.
Yeah, especially in the Impossible Lair, him and the other composers in that are just make some incredible songs. That's really what sold me in that one. The Impossible Lair was the soundtrack was incredible. Mostly Nintendo stuff like. Donkey Kong's got great songs. David Wise is a genius. You got your Mario songs. Mario Kart songs are usually my favorites.
But it's usually like, it's kind of like where I said like the Persona Dancing series has really, really good remixes. I feel like it's a similar thing with like Mario Kart. It's like, you know these songs, but we're going to arrange them and do them differently. And it's just like exciting.
There's like four or five different versions of Rainbow Road that are not different arrangements. They're straight up different songs. And they're all fucking fire.
Oh my god, every one of them. The Mario Kart 8 Rainbow Road theme is
fantastic.
That's my favorite.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
The 8-bit theory.
Yeah, I know.
The YouTube channel. He does a whole episode on just the Rainbow Road theme and how it's evolved over time, and how they had the at the end of the song, they have this point where it's just they don't know what to do with the melody, and it kind of, I think what the goal was to make it sound like a shooting star, but it does feel a little awkward musically. But then 8 fixes it, and that's why I think 8's my favorite, just because it fixes that end part really well and it flows with the rest of the song. But yeah, incredible soundtrack, incredible songs. I gotta say though, that one of my favorites is the Dynasty Warriors series. Such great rock music in that, and each and every one of the games has great music.
That is one of the few positive things I would give that series. It's like you go there and you're like, all right, I'm into it. Okay.
Yeah, I've been playing since 2, and I didn't play 9 because screw that. But you know, 1 through 8.
I want that Persona 5 one.
1 through 8 is great. Has incredible songs all throughout. So it's definitely in my rotation.
Yeah. Is that it for you?
But I can go on. I can go on.
That's the thing. Yeah. There's so many. There's so much good.
Yeah, we could literally just do an entire like almost podcast of just video games.
A lot of people would listen.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I all that's good, Jack.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I would always come back about you and just like, you just have folders on folders on folders, like gigs and gigs and gigs of just like VGM stuff. Like,
I've made playlists of like my favorite songs from each game and in album that I have. And like to finish it, if I hit play, would take like a week and a half. Like, and I was still not done filling the playlist.
Love it.
What about you, Ty?
Yeah. So, recently I redownloaded, like, for top 3. Number 3 is Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I recently redownloaded it, and I've been listening to it, and like, in the game, it's really, really good. Outside of the game, it hasn't aged super well. It's still like good, and like, there's some themes in it that I'm like, oh yeah, this kind of hits me. But nothing too crazy. It's still like a really good one, and it fits the game perfectly, which is why I want to mention it.
Right.
Number 2 is like Persona 5. You know, Bill talked about it earlier. Like, it has so many just hits on it. It just gets you going. Like Rivers in the Desert, like, gives me goosebumps.
That's probably one of if not my favorite song on there.
My girlfriend and I. Oh, sorry. Yeah, my girlfriend and I love to joke about Shapeshifter, which comes up in the main theme, or not the main theme, but like the overworld theme. But number 1, like almost far and beyond, is Final Fantasy IV. Like, so many good tracks. You've got Golbez Clad in Darkness, the main theme of the Red Wings. And like, it was funny, I've been listening through with it with my girlfriend, and she's like, yeah, I want to walk down the aisle to Theme of Love. Mm-hmm. And like, now listening to like Theme of Love makes me tear up.
You're like, well, we're done. That's it. Let's get married tomorrow.
But just that entire, number 1, it's like my favorite main series game, but like the music really delivered the mood just every time, just nailed it. Oh God. Yeah. Final Fantasy IV is easily my number 1. But if I had to mention not JRPGs, like the one I have to talk about is Undertale. Like, Undertale's amazing. It's 100 songs of just great hit after great hit. They're all super short,
like a euphoria, like,
yeah
it captures so many like emotions really well.
Yeah, and like, people love to meme about like Megalovania, and Megalovania is a very good song, but then you've got like Heartbreak, Asgore, Papyrus's theme, Bone Trussel, that's it. Like, and then to follow that up with Deltarune, like, Deltarune's, like, cool. Just demo soundtrack was amazing. Just blew me away the first time I heard it. And I still put it on in the background. Like, it's still amazing. Shoutouts to, I I doubt he'll ever see this, but like huge shout outs to Toby Fox, because like that is an amazing soundtrack for like probably one of the best games of the last decade.
Yeah. Anything else, Ty, or are you good?
I think that's good. I think I got my all my favorites out. So how about you, Bobby?
Oh god, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You can do this.
Oh, who even cares about video game music?
clearly nobody.
Well, right. So Final Fantasy VI is my one. That's like my desert island video game, like OST. Specifically because there's at least three songs that you could listen to like over and over again on like that are desert island themed.
Oh.
Oh, I think like, if I had to choose one album.
If I had to choose one song, that's 1 2.5 minute loop for the rest of time. No, it's gotta be Final Fantasy VI. In terms of like most like meaningful, there's only a couple of soundtracks that have inspired me to be like, I want to do an album of just that game, right? A bunch of them are not JRPGs, so I have to cut them out of my like at least initial running.
Yeah.
Because I would say, yeah, Final Fantasy VI is one, Chrono Trigger is two, and I'm pretty close to just kind of making it easy and being like, and Earthbound. And so there, boom, we're done. But I really do think that the soundtrack, I mean, the soundtrack in Final Fantasy VII really should be there. So I would probably put 7, 6, and Chrono Trigger as my top three.
That's
super three fair. Very good choices.
I think that like the merits of all three of those soundtracks kind of just stand on their own. Like I don't need to
You don't have to explain it because it is.
There's nothing defend. There's nothing that needs defense there because everyone's like, well, yeah, those are fucking brilliant. All three of them are incredible soundtracks. Anxious Hearts is still one of my favorite pieces, and it's like it's an oddly disjointed piece, and it's still to my ear like something that's like I would consider like a perfect piece of music. Obviously, like One Winged Angel and all that fun stuff is another part of it. But like, this is where it gets more fun when we're talking about, okay, so what are Bobby's favorite video game soundtracks that are like not JRPGs? And I'm sitting here being like, oh God, I don't know. Like Gareth Coker's Ori and the Blind Forest, right?
My girlfriend just started playing that. I haven't touched it yet.
So it's a really terribly fun game. I mean, it's so much fun to play, but I, at MAGFest, one year, I went for like 3 or 4 years in a row. It's always the first weekend of January, so it's really hard to go to
that.
I've been trying to go. But I saw Gareth Coker with the Videri String Quartet. So he's up there playing a piano or playing a guitar with a brilliant string quartet behind him, playing the soundtrack to Ori while Ori plays in the background. Oh, and I'm sitting there being like, that's the show that I want to see. Like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
So that's one of them. Mega Man 2. Is the one that's like kind of like I think put a lot of people into the VGM world because it was so good.
What's more iconic than
Windman theme?
Oh, Windman or Airman?
Yeah.
That's one of the most iconic, and like, you know, if you think video game music and you don't think Airman, and you're like anywhere within like our age range.
See,
you have no say because that's
song, I really wanted to do like I wanted to do a version of Airman. So here's the thing. So pretend you're Bobby now and you're trying to pitch Arc Impulse on we should do a Mega Man 2 EP, right? 5 or 6 songs from Mega Man 2. Like, let's do that. And everyone in the band is like, I don't know, Bobby, that's kind of like it's a little done. Like, people have done that before. And I'm like, yeah, they've all done it, but none of them have done it well. Like, I wanted to do it like a Latin funk EP.
Ooh.
Like bring on 3 extra drummers, bring on a brass section, and bring on like a like it's basically a Tito Puente song anyway. Like it arranges itself. Yeah. So I'm still planning on doing that, P.S. One of the other ones that I want to shout out is Super R-Type. The R-Type game for Super Nintendo has an insanely good soundtrack. But it's very much – this is like the king of orc hits. If you're familiar with what an orc hit not like orc, but orchestra, right? Like the bow. For the best orc hit, like on a MIDI keyboard, if you've ever like set to orchestra hit, bow. The best one, for example, is "Owner of a Lonely Heart" by Yes. Like those are orchids, like and they are, and oh my god, are they orchids? So the Super R-Type soundtrack is like 80% orchids, and I feel like the programmer like didn't know that orchids were only supposed to be used as like a hit. He made it like the entire fucking soundtrack. it's incredible. And I'm not saying this as a person that like, oh, it's funny, that's why it's good. No, yeah. It's sick. Like, yeah. It's compositionally speaking, outrageously good, complicated, intelligent, and it's super R-Type. It's like basically the game itself was a throwaway. Whatever, this fucking spaceship goes from left to right.
Right.
That's it.
And you're like oh, that's the shit. This music.
Oh my god, I don't care. This music is rules. And like I wanted to die because the music that they play when you die fucking shreds. And I was like, okay, let's just leave this on.
Tank.
So that's another one. And then there's one other one. Oh, so another secret sleeper hit that I like feel like no one talks about. And I'm like, okay, am I alone on this? But Legacy of the Wizard for NES. Legacy of the Wizard was a really shitty action adventure game. It was damn near impossible. You couldn't win. It was like an impossible game. Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with the dynamite. Like you can't get by it. Like it's actually built that way. But oh my god, the music was phenomenal. Phenomenal music. Like Dungeon, the songs are called like Dungeon, Wizard, Cave. You know, like those are the names of the songs. And I'm like sitting there going, dude, Wizard or like Dragon or whatever. I was like, these songs are great. They're like phenomenal shit.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever played it, but like I'll have to go check out that soundtrack if it's like up there.
You'll play and be like, huh, Bobby like this? And like, well, Bobby kind of liked the game. Bobby fucking loved the soundtrack. Yeah. It's so good. So
talking about soundtracks versus the game itself, like I said, Chrono Cross became one of my favorite soundtracks. I don't like the game. I don't ever plan on playing the game again if I could help it. The soundtrack is a regular rotation.
Right. Well, cool. I love this, and I can honestly talk about it forever. So I appreciate you guys like letting me on it and letting me voice my thoughts. I probably would get like so schooled. By like everyone I play with, everyone that I've played in the band with, everyone that I've shared a stage with over the past like 5 or 6 years, like since I was in Arc Impulse, would all be like, "Bob, you sound like a chump." Like on that podcast, like they're like, "Well, you didn't even mention Guilty Gear." I was like, "Yes, I did. I did that one time."
There's a bunch of stuff that like I think, you know, can be said. I think everyone has different opinions, and they're all valid. You know,
like we covered a lot of game soundtracks, and there's still like tons. From both sides of the ocean, Western and Eastern. Like we didn't mention like the Halo 3 soundtrack, which is insanely good.
I'm looking at my list and I'm really upset that I didn't mention a whole bunch of these.
I pulled up a couple of different lists, like truth be told, of just like, you know, Kirby, right? Like, come on. Like those are the songs that are tethered in so hard with your nostalgia that like you can't not enjoy it. You have to. For real. One of the ones for me is
Super Mario World.
Treetops Ragtime and my piano player in Ark can play it, and I'm just like, do that. You know, like I no one else in the band can play it. I'm just like, yo, dude, do that thing. How do you close your eyes and you're not running, jumping on trees like while you hear that? Like, you have to.
Yeah.
Or it's either that or you have like weird Smash flashbacks.
Right. Star Fox. F-Zero.
Yeah.
Other racing games. Racing games notoriously have some of the best soundtracks, like Cruisin' USA or Moon Over the Castle. Fuck. What is it? Gran Turismo?
Gran Turismo has great soundtracks, yeah.
Moon Over the Castle. What the fuck? Racing game. Yeah, Gran Turismo 4. 4. Sorry. My bad. I was like, I know I'm right, but not the number is not right.
Outrun?
Yeah. I mean, even to the point where you're like, okay, listen. what about games that only existed in arcades, right? What about the video game that starring Aerosmith? where you have a gun that shoots CDs?
Oh, man, right? I played a good chunk of that game, and it sucks. It sucks, but man, you want to keep playing because it's just like so much of a like, what's happening? happening in this game?
I don't think I'm following the plot. I think I'm a bad enough dude to rescue the president. Yeah. I don't really know.
And you're like trying to shoot the wall, and then there's like CDs that pop out, and you're like, oh, I guess I gotta collect the CD for some reason.
And like kids later, like, I mean, no one will play that game ever in the future. So, but like, okay, do you guys know the band Bit Brigade? You know Bit Brigade? The band that like plays video game soundtracks, but they also have a guy speed running the game
as a performer on
the band. So like, if he fucks up, which he doesn't, he does not fuck up. He's like a perfect speed runner. Yeah. But if he fucks up, the whole band goes like, boo, 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 boo.
Oh, no.
And so they do. They've done. I've seen them do Mega Man 2. I've seen them do Castlevania. I've seen them do Batman for NES. And when they do Batman for NES, which is notoriously like a really hard game. That's a really difficult game to play. Yeah. And he beats the whole game in 15 minutes or less. And it's like it's one portion of their set. So their set is three video games. Oh, DuckTales for NES, which is like one of the ones.
That's
like
one of the big ones. That's such a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
And it's so good, and nobody, like, so that's the thing. This is a defining characteristic of, like, oh, you're clearly in a video game music band. If you are like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of over that soundtrack. Everyone else on the planet is like, oh, yeah, that's really good. I forgot how good that is. Yeah. And I'm like, I
can't. I mean, like, look, the DuckTales one, it's like, if you watch the new DuckTales, they'll sing it. They had it in there.
Oh,
one of the recent episodes.
The voice of Launchpad McQuack in the new DuckTales show is a guy that I went to elementary school with.
Really?
No way.
Yeah, awesome. Nice. His name is Beck Bennett. He's on SNL. He's part of the SNL cast, but he's the voice of like, duh, hey, Mr. Scrooge, but he like fucking nails it. I mean, his Launchpad is
like, it's more like nasally. It's like,
I never know that he's in a Disney cartoon show with
Doctor Who.
I'm like, are you kidding? Like, Beck, you made it, dude. Like, do you guys remember that?
Like,
yeah. I mean, like, you hang out with David Tennant, like in New York. Like, that's fucking disgusting. I want your life, but I kind of don't because you live in New York. Like, fuck that.
I'm sorry. I don't even think we have zero listeners from there now.
Oh yeah, zip. That's okay. They don't have technology there anymore. They went back to the dark ages over the past like couple of days. No, Beck and I like went. Yeah, we were at the same bus stop, and neither of us like. I mean, he was a year older than me, but we were buddies. And so my family's been like, "Oh, first he was in those AT&T commercials where it's like the guy in the suit and four kids at the table. Like that's my boy." And then what happened was he got an SNL cast, and then he like got Launchpad. How do you get Launchpad? Like that's amazing.
That's a great role.
Yeah. I was like, Yeah, sure about SNL. Who cares? But you got Launchpad McQuack, like, for real?
Interesting. He had, like, I think, like, two or three episodes where it's the Darkwing Duck, like, themed episodes or whatever. Or
like, a crossover episode.
Huh? Yeah, where the original voice, because, like, he's, like, a big fan, and they talk about it in the series, how Launchpad
the year. Right.
But, yeah, the original voice is in it, and then they, like, there's a new guy's like, I'm going to take up the cowl, basically. And the one guy, because they're making a new, like, dark reboot of it.
Yeah, and, I heard about it.
Yeah, and then the original voice is like, they can't do it without me, you know? It's a great like, episode.
You sound great.
And there's a bunch of Launchpad in there, and it seems like he's been getting more screen time in the last couple.
Which, I mean, like, dude, I hope that it, like, turns into, I mean, like, I hope it turns into something. It did turn into something.
It's DuckTales.
Yeah, like, it's fine. But I just love that, like, you know, pop culture, right? Like this whole, the whole thing that we're all doing in some way, shape or form, it's like derivative pop culture. It's all paying homage. It's all full of respect and admiration and like, and real like desire to connect with the people that also like it. Right. I mean, like we had so much fun playing Comic Cons hey guys, if you're dressed up like a character of a game that we're playing a song from, you're totally allowed to just come up on stage. Like, we don't care. So, to Far Away Times, which is the last song of Chrono Trigger, which is, I mean, the band is called Arc Impulse. We kind of liked Chrono Trigger.
Just a little bit?
A little tiny.
Tiny bit.
And so, yeah, at one point in time, I think in Anime Midwest up in Milwaukee, like a couple of, oh my God, like 5 years ago, 4 years ago, an entire crew was dressed like the Chrono Trigger crew. And so they just ran up on stage and all of a sudden, like, we've got Luca and Robo fucking jamming with us, being like, brr, And I'm just sitting there being like, this is my life now. Like,
I have peaked.
Life that I
do. Right.
It's so awesome. Anyway, wouldn't change it for the world. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, you're a wellspring of knowledge. You're a decent dude, I guess.
Okay.
On some days. But yeah, thanks for having us on. Thanks for having us on, Bobby. I'm no longer on the show. Bobby's taking my place. Yeah.
Welcome to JRPG Book Club, Bobby.
Start playing cards.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's much else to say. I mean, there's a ton, there's but a not enough to. We don't have enough time.
Yeah.
Yeah. First three, then I jack up the price, guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this was a good episode on, you know, some of our favorite music. You know, reach out to us if you want to talk some more to listeners and stuff. Tell some of your favorites. I'm sure there's a ton that we didn't get a chance to cover because there's so much. I think that makes it for this episode. This was Bill.
Jack.
Hi.
And Bobby. Check out baronvonfuture.com. I've got a full-length album coming out a little bit later this summer.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you're on our end credits, too, so you get the double coverage.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Hey, thanks.
Hey, I mean, you created the music for our opening ending, so.
Do you know what it's called?
Huh?
No, what is it?
Oh, I do.
The name of the song that you picked for your title that I wrote is called McQuack.
Yeah.
Oh,
hey, all right. I like that.
Dude, I love it. Like, every once in a while, I'll pull just the file and listen to just the song because I still love it. I'm like, man, this is the opening and ending to our thing. And it's so good.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Sweetheart.
Listen to Baron Von Future's music. I can't say it enough. I tell people on the regular, like, if you like weird chip stuff that's out there, he's your guy. So,
yeah.
Again, thanks, guys, for listening. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you next time.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, Bill again. Special thanks go out to Ian Harris, who created our logo and design, at IanHarris247 at Instagram. We also have Baron Von Future, who created our fabulous intro and outro music. Check them out on Facebook and Instagram, and check out his music on the web at baronvonfuture.com. And I'll catch you guys next time.